All right, good morning. This is David Ambrose. We're here in the fantastic and beautiful City Council chambers. Today's date is today?
The 12th.
The 12th. Correct? January 12th. Am I wrong? There we go. Excellent. And commissioners present include myself, David Ambrose. We have Dana Perlman, Renee Dick Wilson, Caroline Cho, Mr. John Mack, and Veronica Badia Campos. Good morning, everyone. A couple housekeeping items for everyone. Our speaker cards are located in the rear of the room along with the agenda. So if you're here to speak on an item, please make sure that you go ahead and fill in one of those speaker cards. We're going to be following the agenda as it's laid out there. If you do fill out a speaker card wishing to speak on an item on the agenda or an item not on the agenda during public comment, there is a basket for collection of speaker cards on my right over there. Please note the public comment period is for any item not on the agenda. At this time, please turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate so they don't disturb the proceedings. I want to remind this raucous crowd today that disruptions will not be tolerated. If you interrupt or disrupt the proceedings, you'll receive one warning. If you continue to disruptive behavior, you'll be asked to leave the meeting. With regards to item number three, if you represent a certified neighborhood council and you have a written resolution or a community impact statement, please let James know. If they are with regards to a specific item, we'll be hearing those as the item is called. If they're in general or about a matter of policy, we'll hear those now or soon, excuse me. Again, please let James know if you have those. The first item on the agenda is item number one, which is the director's report. We have Mr. Bertone here present. Vince, do you have anything in the director's report?
Yes,
today?
Actually, the beginning of the director's report, I'd like to turn over to Deputy Director Kevin Keller for community plan program update.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kevin Keller, City Planning. Happy New Year for the new commission. Just wanted to introduce Craig Weber. We're very delighted to be here to give a quick update on where we are with our community plan update program, what's in the pipeline for the next year and a half, and then also give a little bit of insight into the organizational structure of our new community plan team that was included in this year's budget. We do hope to have that renewed and expect that to be renewed in next year's budget, and it's really a very positive moment for long-range planning and the city, and so I'm happy to introduce Mr. Craig Weber to walk us through this.
Hi, good morning, commissioners. Craig Weber, city planning staff. By request, closer still. We're doing better? Thank you. By request, I'm here to provide an overview of the department's community plan program, which, as most of you know, cities in the state of California are required to provide a general plan that includes a land use element. But given the size of the city of Los Angeles, we've elected to divide our city into 35 discrete community plan areas, shown here on the map. So while most cities are obligated to update a land use element every 15 years or so, we're obligated to update 35 of them continually. It's a shade of self-aggrandizement here early in the morning. So the substance of community plans has certainly evolved significantly since the program's inception in the 1960s. So shown here on the slides are something of the evolution of this program over the years. So we have a land use diagram from San Pedro in the 1960s, looking through a 2017 lens that looks to be a sketch on the back of a cocktail napkin compared to what we're doing these days. We also have the broadsides of the 1970s where we combined our land use map and policies in one single layout. This is sort of a popular favorite for its vintage appeal among community planners. And then the program has continued to evolve as the magnitude of policies and goals for community plans has changed over the years. So while community plans do evolve and will continue to do so, I think it's important to highlight what their essential features are for the sake of this discussion. So number one, community plans contain goals and policies that cover a broad range of land use issues. So these goals and policies are aspirational. They're intended to guide decision making not only by city planning and by this commission, but by all departments and city decision makers where land use is involved. Community plans also include a land use map, often referred to as the general plan land use map. And this map provides a particular land use designation to each and every parcel within the plan area. So just by way of a very brief orientation, where you tend to see yellows and oranges, that's land designated for housing. Shades of red usually implies commercial, blues imply industrial. That's something of an industry standard. So each property is given a particular land use designation that then allows for a certain range of zones and thus a certain level of building activity and use. And then lastly, though not part of the community plan per se, when the department updates a community plan, it also carries out a host of corresponding zone changes intended to implement the goals and policies of that plan. And that is why often, as this body reviews approval of a community plan, it is often mired in decision making around zoning rather than high level policies. And I do want to note that the city is in the process of comprehensively rewriting its zoning code so that there is a much better range of zones or tools to better implement these wonderful goals and policies. So after something of a trek through the wilderness of recession-related budget cuts, the department is finally seeing some positive momentum in its activities to update community plans. So by way of summary, in 2015, two community plans were updated in the San Fernando Valley, the Granada Hills and the Sylmar community plans. In 2016, the West Adams community plan was updated, and the San Pedro plan followed closely behind, having been before this commission several weeks ago. We anticipate that it will be through the council's adoption process in the coming weeks. And in 2017, we anticipate bringing the South and the Southeast Los Angeles plans through the adoption process, having just completed a successful series of public hearings just before the holidays. And we also anticipate bringing the Hollywood plan through the adoption process. And then in 2018, we are anticipating bringing the Boyle Heights, the Central City, and the Central City North community plans through the adoption process. So it's worth highlighting the magnitude of this work program in and of itself. The area highlighted in the greens and the oranges on this map here represent a combined population of somewhere between 1 and 2 million people, or to put it another way, we're updating the equivalent of a land use element for Long Beach, Glendale, Pasadena, West Hollywood, and Beverly Hills combined. These 10 plans account for the projected population growth of nearly 200,000 people, 100,000 new housing units, and planning around 41 transit stations within the city. So this program in and of itself, no small feat. However, lest we start patting ourselves on the back too soon, we do also have to reflect on the larger program throughout the city. So the map that you see before you here shows the general age of community plans within the city. So those lighter taupe and light blue shades show where plans are of a much younger vintage. And then as we get into the darker and the brighter greens, those are plans of a much, much older age. Thus communicating the need for this program to continue to update plans at a much livelier clip. So for its part, the City Council and the Office of the Mayor have taken to heart the need to see these plans adopted much more expeditiously, and the department's budget for community plans was significantly enhanced for the current budget year, allowing the department to provide the needed staffing resources to this critical program. So those budget resources having just become effective a handful of months ago, the department is in the process of staffing up to a much more expansive program. And I also want to touch on coinciding with the city's budget process last year, the council's Planning and Land Use Management Committee requested that the department provide a report on essentially what the strategy would be, what are you going to do with this check that we're writing you, and how are we going to update plans more expeditiously. And so for its part, the department has envisioned building three teams to update community plans in three regions of the city. So we would be tackling plans in the San Fernando Valley, shown in orange. There would be a team in the Southwest Harbor region, shown in blue, and a team in the Central and East region, shown in green. So the essential goal here is that each team would carry out the work of updating a group of 3 to 4 community plans at a single time, providing some economies of scale with our outreach efforts, allowing the department to provide a single EIR to better analyze impacts across the larger region. So essentially the goal would be to update that grouping of community plans within a 3-year period before moving on to the next grouping of community plans within that same region. So the scheme that you see before you would allow the department to cycle through all of its remaining community plans within essentially a 10-year time frame. I think it's also worth pointing out that the city is currently considering other budget and funding options that might even allow the department to move more expeditiously than 10 years in cycling through all of its community plan updates, but for the time being, this is the plan that is on the table. That concludes my remarks. I'm happy to entertain any questions.
So I want to start with the question, and then we can go around the dais, as this is the director's report. We'll keep it relatively brief. But with regards to the 10-year cycle, is that a one-term cycle, or is that your vision on an ongoing basis, prospective basis? And is the funding ongoing, or is it just to get through the update them once?
It's envisioned as an ongoing program. Obviously, the city has to make budget decisions each and every year, and so it's hard to say whether or not that will evolve into a different vision come 9, 10, 11 years from now, but this is being couched as the city needs to cycle through community plans on a regular basis, and this is the approach that we'd like to take moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you for that answer. Any questions from the commissioners? Renee?
Yeah, this is Renee Dake Wilson. Thank you for putting this together. I really appreciate it. I think we all read the paper and we all know how much the community is upset at our taking up of general plan amendments and zone changes. And I think this is a direct effort to control that. We're looking at things on a case-by-case basis at this point and having an overall plan that is up to date with our current population, our current trends, our current goals, and having a broad brush approach is incredibly valuable. So to lay this out and to really know about the age of some of the plans, you know, some of them not due to any fault of your own, that some of them are very old, and prioritizing this and prioritizing planning will really go a long way and helping our city grow. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Veronica Vidia Campos.
Yeah, just thank you for the presentation. And maybe later we can talk about just the community outreach process for the plans. I would love to kind of help.
Certainly. It's an important and major facet of the overall work program. So I think that's an important conversation to have.
Great, thank you.
I think we can do that maybe in a subsequent director's report to get maybe just focus in on that particular component. What's the vision for community outreach broadly, and spend some time looking and maybe being walked through that. That would be an excellent follow-up perhaps. This was more supposed to be, this is what we're doing, this is the citywide plan, but I think that would be a great thing. Dana, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I had a comment, but I think it goes right into what Veronica was saying. One of the most interesting things with respect to community plans we've done during my time on the commission was with the first time the San Pedro plan came before us, and we actually took our meeting and we went down to San Pedro, and we got a chance to really have a sense of what the community outreach had been and hear from the community members in their community, and also get a sense being down there of the variations of uses that were necessary for that sort of area. And I would love, I know it's a bit of extra work for staff, but I would love from time to time to do something like that. I think it's also great for the city to see us out there in different areas.
We'll take the subway down. All right, thank you. Thank you for that. Vince, you referenced a second report you were gonna do during the director's report?
Yes, President Ambrose, it's regarding the bike plan, and we have representatives from our citywide planning division here.
Excellent. Mr. Katz is not present, who requested this. Claire and team, we're going to end up having to repeat this, so is it all right if we come back to this later in the meeting when Mr. Katz is present?
Yes.
Let's hear the first case, and then we'll come back.
We're not available later this morning. We all have meetings.
We're going to postpone this to the next meeting, because
to
be respectful of your time and the commission's, I want the gentleman who requested this to be present.
I totally understand.
Okay. Thank you, and I apologize for that, but he had some car troubles. Is that all right? I mean, I know the rest of the commission's present, but Mr. Katz requested that, and I want to respect that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, staff. Anything else in the director's report? Okay, thank you. City Attorney, is there anything, Amy, that you want to report at this time?
Deputy City Attorney Amy Brothers, yes, there is. I just wanted to give a very brief update on the legal case involving the Archer School approval. The City Planning Commission approved the CUP for an expansion project of the Archer School for Girls in the spring of 2015. That was appealed to the City Council, which unanimously approved the CUP and certified the EIR on August 4th, 2015. Soon after, petitioners Sunset Coalition, Brentwood Residents Coalition, Brentwood Hills Homeowners Association, and David and Zofia Wright filed a petition for writ of mandate in the Superior Court, challenging the city's approvals. The petitioners contended that the conditional use permit violated various provisions of our municipal code, including height, setback, and floor area. Additionally, the petitioners contended that the EIR violated CEQA because it failed to address significant impacts and feasible alternatives and on other grounds. On September 19, 2016, the court denied the petition and issued a ruling for the city, rejecting all of petitioners' arguments. Subsequently, petitioners moved for a new trial. The court denied that in December last year, and petitioners have now filed a notice of appeal from the trial court's ruling. So there's a pending case in the appellate court. Consequently, the trial court ruling is not final, but I will come back and advise the commission when there's a final resolution and discuss a little more detail what the court's ruling means for the city.
Thank you. Item number two is kick. So with that, I want to jump back also to the director's report. I hear we have Mr. Katz. We postponed an item that I wanted to make sure you were present for, which is the question you had, and this may be a multi-part conversation, but to welcome Ken and Claire to share their thoughts with regards to the bike plan, the bike part of the mobility plan, and helping us understand, in particular to Mr. Katz's question about utilization, either our current understanding or future plans to suss that out. So how long will you need for this?
Just a minute or two.
All right, I'll put three on. If you need more time, of course, we'll accommodate, and Mr. Katz will start with you with questions after.
Thank you. So Claire Bowen, City Planning, we're happy to kind of have the opportunity here to give you an update as to what kind of progress we've been making with the implementation of the mobility plan since it was adopted last year. I noticed specifically to some of Commissioner Katz's questions, we don't have DOT here.
Sorry, excuse me. Deputy City Attorney Amy Brothers, would you please speak a little closer to the mic? I can't hear you.
Absolutely. Should I start over or just pick up? Okay. Unfortunately, we don't have the Department of Transportation here with us now. They'd be happy to come back some other time. I will certainly endeavor to answer the questions that any of you have to the best of my ability afterwards. But just to give you kind of a brief overview, over the past 2 years, DOT has shifted their focus to design quality and data-driven street interventions as opposed to meeting a raw numeric target of installing bicycle lanes. In their emphasis on design quality and as part of the complete street design ethos, DOT is developing new design treatments aimed at attracting more Angelenos to bicycle given the discomfort that many have with riding with traffic. This supports the intent of the Bicycle Enhanced Network Identify the Mobility Plan, which sought to attract more Angelenos to walking and biking. Okay. While much of DOT's recent efforts involved upgrading existing bicycle lanes to improve user experience, DOT did install nearly 8 miles of new bicycle lanes and paths during the last fiscal year. DOT striped standard bicycle lanes in important locations such as Fairfax Avenue and National Boulevard, and they also integrated new green infill paint treatment with bicycle lanes along Vineland Avenue to better highlight merging zones near freeway on-ramps. The first parking-protected bicycle lane was completed on Reseda Boulevard, which is part of the Mayor's Great Streets Initiative. DOT completed the fully protected bicycle lane along Los Angeles Street, which was the first facility in the city to integrate outboard bus platforms and bicycle signal heads. The Los Angeles Street protected bicycle lanes provides a low-stress connection to several of the new bike share stations between Union Station and City Hall East. Another protected bicycle lane was completed along Van Nuys Boulevard in Pacoima, and the anticipated protected bicycle lane as part of the MyFig project is now under construction. All of these protected bicycle lanes serve important corridors along the Bicycle Enhanced Network identified in the Mobility Plan and are a testament to DOT's commitment to implementing the plan as adopted by this commission. We are in the process of evaluating the performance of several of these new bicycle lanes, with studies scheduled or underway along Reseda Boulevard, Van Nuys Boulevard, and Figueroa that will include monitoring changes to collisions, travel speeds, and growth in bicycle travel. Reporting on progress to date would be incomplete without mention of the Vision Zero program. Vision Zero uses, again, a data-driven approach to prioritizing roadway redesign interventions along the high-injury network, which are streets that have the highest concentration of collisions in the city. Vision Zero projects are still in the conceptual engineering stage, though DOT has made early progress in notable pedestrian improvements, such as the new scramble crosswalk at Hollywood and Highland and the new curb extension along Cesar Chavez in Boyle Heights. DOT will evaluate the safety performance of the projects installed as part of Vision Zero, though the data will not be made available until sometime after implementation due to the lag time in obtaining collision data. In partnership with the Mayor's Office, City Planning has also helped lead the Great Streets Challenge. This challenge invites communities to propose street design concepts through a competitive application process, thereby creating a pipeline of projects that are based on community-identified needs. As part of the challenge, we created a web map tool that displays important metrics and indices found in the mobility plan, as well as other related plans. The web map tool provided guidance to potential applicants about where the city seeks to advance policy priorities and provided the partners with a more complete understanding of community challenges and opportunities while also informing the selection of winning applications. 37 applications were received from 99 community partners in 14 council districts, half of which were in high-needs communities. The Mayor's Office will soon be announcing our seven awarded partners. Another example of how departments are collaborating and using data to make informed decisions is the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Grant Program. DOT and City Planning supported the Housing and Community Investment Department in identifying needed transportation investments to complement affordable housing projects. Our combined efforts have helped to secure $64.5 million in funding through the ASIC program. City Planning is also helping to expand the data-driven approach in developing pipeline projects as part of LADOT's strategic capital planning. We are working with SCAG and Metro to share data to identify potential locations where the intervention of particular street improvements could provide a more low-stress experience for people or walk. So that includes my. So as you can see, basically, while we don't have a lot of data yet on the actual performance of things, we're really using data to make decisions about where we put things, so the improvements can be much more effective.
Sure. So my kind of summary, and then Richard, I'll turn right to you, or Ken, unless Ken has anything. My kind of understanding of what you've shared with us today is we are using data to determine where we invest in bike infrastructure in addition to the other infrastructure you've referenced. And there are plans baked into all the new investments we've made. You mentioned at least three, Reseda, MyFig, and I forgot, where data will be collected according to a number of different metrics, one of which is our compliance with Vision Zero, but in addition, usage and other things. So more to come on data in terms of usage, which I think was the crux of our question. Ken, do you want to add to that, or can we turn to Richard to see what
is? Just very quickly, Ken Bernstein, Department of City Planning. Thank you, Commissioner Ambrose. I think you're exactly right that the way you've characterized this, that it is still very early in terms of having actual data to report in terms of utilization, safety, and other measures. But the Mobility Plan 2035 sets the framework for using data as the basis for decision-making, and as these projects do get implemented and as time passes, we will have more data to report to the commission and to others.
Mr. Katz, I think that answers my question, but I want to turn to you as the progenitor of all this. What are your thoughts?
Didn't come close to answering my question.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you.
I mean, that's all the same touchy-feely stuff that we saw in the mobility plan. You know, I mean, when the mobility plan was before us 9 months ago, if I remember right.
Last
time was about 8 9
But I mean, but when the mobility plan was before us, I asked then for a quarterly report on utilization, and we still don't have it. And we have had bike lanes before the current emphasis on more bike lanes, and I assume there's utilization numbers on those, or there should be. 9 months later, I still want utilization because I appreciate the safety aspects, I appreciate the input, I appreciate that we're all gonna sit around a coffee table and plan stuff, that's cool. I wanna know how many people are using them, and I don't want percentages, I want raw numbers, because 3 to 9 is a 300% increase, but it's still not very many people. And considering how much money Metro plans to spend based on Measure R on bike lanes, it would be nice to know if anybody's using them or the increase in utilization. because I also think that might speak to your planning planning process as well. I don't know how, you know, we're measuring everything other than utilization, which makes me wonder.
So Claire, before you begin, I think one thing, we don't have that numbers today, and I want us to be very transparent with that. So I don't want to go back and forth all day, because the specific question is numbers, and we're saying not numbers, qualitative. So I think if his question is numbers, what I'd like to suggest, Vince and Kevin, is we work to get those to the extent we can as the co-author of the mobility plan as a commission. He's asking a question about what is the usage. So can I suggest that in the next meeting, or maybe the meeting after, depends on DOT, not us, can we work to get some hard data around utilization of the bike lanes and report back to this body?
So I think it's worthy of us taking a moment or two to maybe explain kind of the role of data collection and kind of the history of that. The city really does have a poor record of data collection on utilization. I think to Commissioner Katz's concerns, many others have shared that, which is why the mobility plan put an emphasis on at least creating a policy that said that we really value the importance of collecting data. But historically, the role and responsibility of kind of collecting data, especially in the public right-of-way, falls to DOT. Again, DOT has done very little collection of data over the years. It really has fallen in many years to a county nonprofit, which is the LA County Bicycle Coalition. They do bike and ped counts kind of every year. They're kind of actually stopping to do that, hoping that DOT will pick up more of that. DOT right now doesn't have the staffing. They don't have it automatically. They're going to collect that data. There has been monies that the mayor's office through the Great Streets Program got for several programs. But again, you have to do these oftentimes lag almost up to a year after the project is installed to know that for them to have the regular data. So again, we are not the collector of data. That really is DOT's purview. And we are right now relying on their timetable and their ability to collect that data.
That's fair. Before Kevin.
And this is Kevin Keller. I think the question is a really good one. I think what we can maybe suggest, I think what we hear from staff is the data is not imminent, but what we can probably do, and I know we had talked about also including DOT in this conversation, we might want to roll that over to the next first meeting in the month so they can walk across the street and join us, and maybe just give an honest assessment of what we have, what we're working on, because I think the department is looking for that, but I'd like to have DOT here to help explain if there are constraints on getting the data, maybe we can explain how we might be able to assist to roll that out better.
That would be my recommended course of action, Richard, and the only thing I would add, be clear, you mentioning the LA County Bike
Coalition.
Thank you. Is to invite them, you know, or if they have information to share. But I think I don't. We're discussing a cloud which is amorphous, and I think what we're solidly asking for is data. So let's do an assessment of what's available because they have something. I read about it in the paper. They have something about bicycle usage in the city. Let's look at that and what's the plan for them to collect it in the future, and what is the LA County Bike Coalition think about it. Let's hear it very informally in the director's report at the first meeting in February, if I can ask for that, and see if DOT is available. And then, Richard, if we need to formalize it, we can make it an action item after that to see where we come up with in terms of data.
So I think that's a good suggestion, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Kevin's suggestion as well. I guess the impression was that I asked for data 9 months ago and nothing been done on collecting data in the last 9 months. So much for a commissioner request.
Well, let's see what they come up with DOT. I think it's a fair point, and as we were part of the mobility plan, we have we want to know.
I'm not here just
so I think it's a fair question to ask. Renee Dick Wilson.
I'm sorry, Renee. No, I was just going to say, you know, we use data on utilization for making every other decision about transportation. You know, we don't get federal money unless we can show ridership on buses, and then we have to monitor it. We make decisions based on highways and trains, based on utilization and how many people use it. To be studying everything but how many people are using bike lanes seems bizarre to me.
And we require bike parking.
Yes. I mean, we're requiring a lot of things on a premise that there's no data to prove or disprove.
I understand. Renee?
Okay, this is Renee Dake Wilson. I happened to speak with the LA County Bike Coalition yesterday to ask them about their data, knowing that this was coming. Every 2 years, the LACBC does a bike ped count with AARP. It's funded by the AARP, and I think that's notable because while you say it's not related to safety, I think that biking, I'm a cyclist, and I'm a little bit of a cyclist commuter, but more of a recreational cyclist, and tying bike lanes into Vision Zero and safety and into network build out with the amount of dollars spent on it directly correlates to the number of riders that you get. So they're directly focused on getting riders from 8 to 80 is their term for Vision Zero, and they're directly focused on getting women. Women are the, as we talked about in the mobility plan, women are the canary in the coal mine for cycling lanes. If you can get women to cycle, then other people will cycle, and that's why it's very important when the staff talks about protected bike lane around Los Angeles street right, that we drove by today. I drove in my car in the dry. When you start having a network that focuses on that, you start having more safety and you start having more people ride. So I think some of that network is. But their data that comes out is from 2015 from their PED bike count. And what they said, they had four main conclusions: that the most popular streets for cycling are the most dangerous, and that those are high traffic corridors, like we looked at when we did our modifications to the bike plan. Those are the places where people have to get, whether they're in cars, bike, ped, and that they're high income or low income is basically, or transit, is that if you're high income, you're in a car. If you're lower income, you're in transit on a bike or ped. Sometimes you're in those other alternatives because you think it's fun to do or convenient or something like that as well. But those most popular streets are the most dangerous. When they had a decrease in the number of new bike lanes, they saw fewer new cyclists. So yes, they deal with it as percentages, but if you look on their, and what I wrote down from looking at the report, which is all on the LACBC website, is their bike ped count report from 2015 is on the LA County Bike Coalition website. So the percent, what I have from there is percentages, and you asked for real numbers, but their new bike lanes, every time there's new bike lanes, they get a 62% increase in ridership. I think that's significant, even if you're going from 5 to 3, because when you start, or 5 to 3 more, that means you have 8. That, I think, talks about the Vision Zero safety and building out of the network and the connectivity. If you can't get in your bike lane from school to work to home, you're not going to use those bike lanes. So having the network and having a safe network, I think, speaks about that. That 62% ridership increase for new bike lanes also resulted in a 20% decrease in car-to-car collisions in those areas and a 42% decrease in bike and car collisions per their study. So that's a significant improvement, not only in the unprotected person, but also the person in the vehicle with the 20,000 pounds around them. So that was a big improvement in there in the bike and car area for the bike, for the addition of bike lanes, made streets safer for all. And there was a lot of information about the Eagle Rock Road Diet and what that was done along there. That's a really wide right-of-way if you're familiar with Eagle Rock Boulevard. And there's big evidence of safety increases on all fronts, as well as continuation of transit. That's an area that I have to drive in my car frequently. So the information is out there at the LA County Bike Coalition, but it's individuals like you and me who would sign up to do that, and I've signed up and done that once before. And I hope that I'm with you that we need to rely on this information from LADOT and have a sophisticated scientific measure, not only to determine where our bike lanes go based on usage and building out our network, but also for Measure M. There's of the $120 billion budgeted for Measure M, $4 billion is budgeted for biking and walking projects. These projects are much lower cost than any transit or car projects, but they're going to have a great impact. I think that we're going to see, you know, I think that we're going to see the data increase where you have 62% more riders when you have those bike lanes getting built out with the $4 billion of Measure M. Thanks.
So I'm drawing this to a close. Renee is referencing stuff that exists. Let's get it. Let's invite them here. We'll have it in the director's report as a first step. Sounds like it might be a more robust conversation, but let's take the step in the first director's report of February. Let's invite the Bike Coalition folks that Renee and staff also referenced and ask them to come prepared with some information about utilization broadly. And if they don't have it broadly, which I think they probably have something, maybe they can give us specific examples. And concretely, again, to understand what is the plan to collect data on a forward-going basis, not just data-informed decision-making, but what is the plan to bake in collection? Because I think Richard has asked for that enough times. I think we're all clear now on the question if we weren't before. So with that, I'm adjourning the meeting. It is 10:35 a.m. Thank you, everybody.